This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, if President Bush asks for additional funds for the war in Iraq, will he be denied? And U.S. airstrikes hit targets in southern Somalia. Joining us are Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, and Ida B. Wells Barnett, Professor at DePaul University, plus Glenn Lowry, Merton P. Stoltz Professor of the Social Sciences and Professor of Economics at Brown University. He's in Providence. Thanks for being with us, and let's go straight to Nancy Pelosi, who said earlier this week that she would not give President Bush a blank check to continue the war in Iraq. She's also rejected suggestions that Democrats would cut off funding for the war if the president wants to increase the number of U.S. troops in Iraq.
We have to see what the president has to say. It's not an open-ended commitment anymore, but we will always be there to protect our troops and to support our troops. The burden is on the president to justify any additional resources for a mission.
Laura, now what does that mean? We're always going to be there for the troops, but we're not going to give a lot more money. Is this just politics? Is this prudence? Is this budgetary? What are we talking here?
Well, it's what it is. It's a conundrum. On the one hand, she's saying we will always be there for our troops, but part of being there for our troops is getting them out. And in order to get them out, we have to come up with a plan that stabilizes this country and gets the Iraqi government and the Iraqi military in the front end of defending this country in order for us to be able to start to move out of the back end. And unfortunately, I don't know how we're going to do that with the status quo, which is one reason why we're at this point where we'll be tomorrow with the president bringing forth a new plan. I don't know what the plan's going to be. It's clearly going to involve additional troops. That may be inevitable at this point, but I think that the plan, if I were Nancy Pelosi and I was thinking about approving more funding, I'd be looking for some more creative strategies than the same old. And from what I've been hearing, a lot of this plan is going to be, you know, reinforcing things that we've already asked the Iraqi government to do in the past that they haven't done. So we're going to have to get past that.
Glenn, Senator Joe Biden, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said it would be, quote, a tragic mistake if the president chooses to increase troops. But the Democrat also said that cutting off funds was not an option, would probably be an unconstitutional violation of separation of powers if the Democrats tried to block the president's efforts as commander in chief that Congress had voted to authorize going to war. So, you know, again, this conundrum, because in this case, it really is a situation where the Congress usually holds war powers, but it gave them over to the president in this case. Has the Congress made a bargain that it can't get out of?
Well, yeah, you know, you can't run a war by committee. I mean, you know, the Congress isn't suited for the administrative task of actually executing military action. The president is the commander in chief. I mean, Senator Biden is right that this would be a tragic mistake, and it's George Bush's mistake to make. I don't think the Congress can do very much except make clear their opposition, their disagreement. But at the end of the day, of course, they're not going to cut off funds that would materially affect. And, you know, the president and his military advisors and so forth, if they don't want to impeach him, pretty much he's going to be able to make this decision. But I find something really very ironic here. I mean, the question isn't whether the Democrats are loyal and will cut off the troops. I mean, look what Bush has already done to the troops. I mean, he's getting them killed, not to put too fine a point on it. I only mean to say, if there's accountability to be handed out here, 98% of it has to be at the White House, not at the Congress.
Michael, what can the Congress do at this point? I mean, the Congress does have some budgetary powers, but according to Senator Biden, it's not clear in this case whether the Congress has all of the powers it normally does.
Senator Biden hasn't read the Constitution. I don't think he understands it. Look, these Democrats are a sorrowful, sorrowful lot. You call it a conundrum. I just call it sheer double talk. Pelosi, the first woman, the first mother, the first Italian speaker. Now that we're finally over celebrating Pelosi, now can we get on with the people's business, please, Congress? She says that she wants to support the troops. No. The best way to support the troops is to insist on a withdrawal plan. Get them out of Iraq. This whole double talk about supporting the troops who are there, they don't want to be there. Except in somebody's fancy imagination, Biden talks about it's unconstitutional for the Congress to declare war and then to say we, meaning the Congress, can't micromanage it. Well, you know, the Congress did micromanage Reconstruction. You know, read your history, Senator Joe Biden. But that's besides the point. The Congress has the authority of the purse. They can cut the funds. President Bush cannot wage war if he doesn't have money to do so. So these guys, and then you have the sorrowful of all Democrats, the Democrat independent of Connecticut, Lieberman. He wants more troops in Iraq. You know, more death, more destruction, more U.S. policing of a civil war.
But
these
people are nuts. Michael,
don't
you risk I hate to interrupt one of Michael's rants, but don't you risk just deep pushing us into a deeper quagmire here? If we cut off the funds, that's not going to get our troops out of there. I don't think anybody has a political will to just do a major withdrawal at this point. We need to be able to stabilize the country we went and screwed up and put into this chaos. In order to do that, we need more resources. I'm not for sending in more troops, but how do you get the country stabilized without a new strategy, without more manpower, without more firepower?
Well, you know, the
the only alternative is to admit defeat. I don't mean use that word, but what I mean to say is the other path is to come out and say we screwed it up royally. Let's cut our losses and figure out what we're going to do and accept whatever the consequences of that are. But of course, he's not going to do this. And the fact is, men and women are going to die for the political convenience of this guy. In other words, to avoid the public humiliation of confronting the reality of his blunder, people are going to die.
Well, I thought the question was to me, but this is Michael Myers. Look, you could either admit
how
defeat.
How do we know?
Go ahead, Michael.
You could either admit defeat or you could declare victory. You know, the war is over. You know, you get in there, you invaded the country, the Iraq. The guy who was the dictator of Iraq is now gone. You can declare victory and get out. We cannot police a civil war. That is what's happening in this country now. We're propping up a government in Iraq that doesn't have the support of the people or can't control its own affairs, and we can't control it for them. And so what happened to the Baker Commission report? That wasn't supposed to be the think plan. That was supposed to be the blueprint. Everybody was waiting. Bush has changed the subject. The Democrats have now changed the subject. You know, how much more thinking do we need? How much more brilliance do we need to get our troops out of there?
All right. Well, we are going to take a wrap on this for a second. We will be covering a lot more about what's being called the surge, the additional troops, later on this week. If you're joining us, we're talking to Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, and Glenn Lowry, Professor of Economics at Brown University, who also has an extremely long other title, which I'm not even going to attempt to read again. I'm Farai Chidea, and you're listening to News and Notes. Let's move on to some real breaking news in Somalia. The president of Somalia, who just recently was instated after the Ethiopian troops helped push him in, said that the U.S. has a right to bombard terrorist suspects who attacked its embassies. He's referring to the fact that the Associated Press is reporting that helicopter gunships have attacked new targets in Somalia, close to the scene of a U.S. airstrike aimed at suspected al-Qaeda terrorist yesterday. Now, earlier, a U.S. official and a witness said there were at least two U.S. airstrikes on different locations against terror targets in Somalia. Now, this is following the Black Hawk Down incident. The U.S. hasn't really engaged directly in Somalia, and these are al-Qaeda targets and suspects. Glenn, is this a wise move for the U.S.?
I don't know, but it could be. I mean, remember the war on terror? You know, I wouldn't have called it a war, but there sure is an international threat, and it has to be dealt with. Somalia is a failed state. I don't know the state of our intelligence, but it's very likely that these guys, I'm talking now about the U.S. military, know what they're talking about. I don't doubt that actions like this are going to be necessary in the real war on terror. Whether or not this is one of them, time will tell. I would only other say that I'd rather that there be some international legitimacy to this kind of action rather than, you know, a sense of kind of cowboy unilateral U.S. move. But given what the president has done in Iraq, our political international consensus to fight the war on terror isn't what it should be. But, you know, on the whole, I think actions like this are probably going to be necessary.
Laura, what do you think?
Well, you're right, Glenn. International legitimacy would be nice, but as you point out, we didn't really have true international legitimacy. At least some people think so when we went into Iraq, and so the chickens are coming home to roost. I'm concerned because I don't think we have enough information to know whether or not there really is a threat, a terrorist threat. There's a lot of rhetoric about an Al-Qaeda cell, but we don't have any information about the substance of that. And we can't just go around willy-nilly just taking out particular installations or groups of people around the world because we've decided without any evidence to back it up that they're terrorist threats. I am concerned about a terrorist threat as well. I think that if there is one in places like Somalia, there's probably one in a whole lot of other countries. And then part of the reason goes back to Iraq because we've taken our eye off the ball and we've become so mired in this mess in Iraq. And we put so many of our resources in, and clearly we're sending the message that we're about to put even more of our resources, which are already stretched thin in, that no wonder folks are thinking that they can start to develop installations, start to develop armory and other things in other countries. And this is a result of that.
Michael, this is another situation of the difference between what some people call state-sponsored terrorism and stateless terrorism. These Al-Qaeda suspects or look like they're moving through Kenya. They're leaving the country. They are able to go anywhere. They're not tied to a particular nation. And so that makes it very difficult for the U.S. to keep track of them and to decide, well, who is the enemy? The enemy is not Somalia. The enemy is not Kenya. The enemy is not in many ways Iraq. The enemy is mobile. What does that do to our ability?
And thus it's very difficult to declare war on a nation that you can claim through false intelligence or misinformation or whatever information sources you have are harboring quote-unquote terrorists. Whatever make these terrorists, they are mobile. They are diverse. Many of them are fanatics, if not all of them, and they're not controllable. And I don't think a declaration of war against nations that have these terrorists in them is going to resolve the problem. So this, you know, this is breaking news. I'm not going to give instant analysis, but I can tell you one thing. It highlights again the question and the issue of intelligence, military intelligence, secret intelligence. It's the need for sophisticated worldwide intelligence, international cooperation, military technology, yes, but also international force and international cooperation in terms of dealing with terrorism wherever it rears its ugly head. And it's a lot of times people who I would call tribes as well as individuals, people who are fanatics. And I just think this is a situation that requires sophistication as well as intelligence and may very well require a military action.
Let's turn to a situation here in the United States. There's increasing suspicion of what has been called a suicide in Louisiana. In Westlake, Louisiana, there was the first black mayor-elect, Gerald Wash Washington. Now, yes. 3 days prior to being sworn in as mayor of the predominantly white town, and he won most of the white vote, Washington was found shot to death, shot in the chest. Relatives called for state police to investigate after the local coroner ruled his death a suicide. It's not impossible to shoot yourself in the chest, but it is very difficult, and most people don't do it that way if they're going to shoot themselves. State police now say that they will begin to investigate. Do you think that this is something that is out of line and out of character, Glenn?
Well, I don't know. I mean, how can I have an opinion about this? You know, this is not... I would almost say this is not news in a certain sense. I mean, who knows what happened down there? So
I have an opinion.
You know, well, Michael, you go ahead.
Thanks. I have an opinion. Look, this is a situation you have where you have Louisiana, which is close to Mississippi. And we've been brought up on In the Heat of the Night. And we've been brought up on CSI. And the notion of sloppy investigations. And those images are burnt into our mindset and our consciousness. Images of racism and inept local police. and sometimes local police who are racist. These images won't go away. Now, this was a colorful personality of a mayor. He's very popular in a majority white town. He was also a guy who rode a Harley Davidson in leather pants, and he got shot in the chest. But guess what? There was no suicide note. They did not do fingerprints from the truck in which he was. They did not check the ballistics on the gun. And they did not even do the gun ownership check. So the question is, was this really a suicide? Usually people would put a gun in them to their head, not to their chest. So the questions linger. So, yes, we do need a state and police investigation or independent investigation, because the local coroner, just like big city coroners, could be wrong.
Well, let me throw in before you go ahead, Glenn, and I'll go back to you. This might help you out. And of course, this is just another person's opinion. It's his son, Washington's son, stated, "This is not a race issue. This is a greed issue. My father was in the process of doing an external audit on the previous administration." So, first of all, there may be no plot, but if there is a plot, it could come from multiple angles. There could be a racial angle. There could be a money angle. Louisiana is known for racial.
Forgive me.
Go ahead.
Forgive me, but I think this is tabloid journalism. I just think the man may have been murdered or he may not, but you can't decide that from a radio studio. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying we just went from talking about the most serious matters taking place in our public life to this.
Well, Glenn, I think that any time a mayor, a newly elected mayor of a town, I don't care if the town has got 4,500 people or 3 million people, when he is shot under mysterious circumstances and the police department is trying to shut the case without very little investigation, I think that's something that we should seriously think
that's
about.
News.
I think that threatens our government. That threatens, you know, the very fundamentals of our government. Now, and whether it was about race or not, it may not have been about race. The man was popular, obviously. But whether it was about race or not, it has to be investigated.
I'm not against investigating it.
But you were saying earlier you thought it was like, you know, it's a tabloid story. It's one of those stories that really is not even worth talking about.
I think it's relevant simply in the sense that Michael said that it really does speak to a lot of long-held prejudices in America. And the question is, do those prejudices, should those weigh on our minds as we consider a case like that?
Well, here's what I would say. I would say that
we've got almost no time.
The prejudices that remain are the serious political. I mean, you know, they're prisons, they're welfare. You had this welfare story on. They're what is the government going to do about helping the people? We had a conservative revolution. They said that taxes could never be.
Well, guys, you know what? It's a wrap. It's a wrap. Once again, we have gone over. Glenn Lowry, who says no tabloid journalism on News and Notes, professor of economics at Brown University. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist. And Michael, always has an opinion, Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Coming up next, the legendary Amiri Baraka.